good Monday, everybody. Welcome into Mining Stock Daily. Your host here, Trevor Hall, coming off a long week from Vancouver in the Vancouver Resource Investment Conference. It's going to be an interesting week here as well. Short week. Not only are the Canadians celebrating Victoria Day on Monday, but I'm also on the road here in the next couple of days off to Europe for the Deutsche Goldmesse in Frankfurt. So happy to support Soar Financial, our friend Kai Hoffman, and all the team there with 2 days of great content and also great presentations from the junior resource world. So we did a number of interviews with the Yukon Mining Alliance last week in Vancouver. I'm going to air quite a bit of them right now, and then we'll air a second handful later in the week. So I just wanted to get this out the door for your listening pleasure. So that's going to be it from us today here on Monday. We will be back tomorrow morning with the morning briefing and hopefully to somewhat of a regular scheduled program. Have a great day, everybody. Be well. Well, we're jumping right into the Vancouver Resource Investment Conference this week here in Vancouver, British Columbia. We're starting off the week with chatting with Peter Tallman, who's the president and CEO of Klondike Gold Corp. Klondike trades on the TSX Venture with the symbol KG. Peter, good morning.
Good morning. I'm the first.
You are the first.
Well, I'm privileged.
That's a, you know, there's a lot of news coming out of Klondike lately, a big drill program underway. So give us a, give the investors an idea of where exactly you are drilling and, you know, what's the, what does success look like for the company this summer?
Well, a bit of the backstory. So we've just published the first 43-101 geology technical report for the bedrock in the Klondike in 125 years. In that report, there's a map that rewrites the geology of the Klondike. And part of that is, historically, the gold mineralization of the Klondike is thought to have been Jurassic, 180, 160 million years of age. And it's not, we think. We feel strongly it isn't. And previously, there'd been no faults ever identified within the 600 square kilometer package that we have, despite the idea that it was a orogenic gold deposit. And for an orogenic gold deposit, you need a fault somewhere because that's where the mineralization is. So it's a revolutionary map that points to the prospectivity of a belt that, until I got here and before we published this map, was considered there's 20 million ounces of gold in nuggets and stuff lying on surface, been mined historically, still being mined. And it was concluded that there's no gold left in the bedrock. It had all been eroded away. So really, there was no exploration potential until I got there. So with that, it's a long-winded explanation intro. Within the, we've just published the 43-101 geology report. Within the next couple of months, we're going to have the first ever in the 125-year history of the Klondike bedrock mineral resource. It'll be between, forward-looking statement, between 500,000 and 1 million ounces, all open pittable at surface. Two zones within that. They explain the source of Bonanza Creek, which is the discovery creek, and also El Dorado Creek, which is the most prolific creek in the Klondike. And to your question, what are we doing this summer? We are drilling in between known areas of what we hope are going to be mineral, part of a mineral resource estimate. There's about a kilometer and a half to drill that would connect these two areas. We think that's mineralized, and that's our job basically in the first 2,500 meters. Mm-hmm. The objective of the year is to be well over, another forward-looking statement, well over 1 million ounces as mineral resource, and we would update that early next year.
I'm really interested in, can you kind of walk me through the story of this reinterpretation of the geology here, and why has it taken so long to take a fresh look on the Klondike, which has been just, has, you know, there's been books written about this.
There's been a lot, well, so it's been sensationalized. It's a gold rush, right?
Right.
Everybody in the world knows about it. Most of the world participated in it, actually, yeah, at the time. The geology of it was, in fact, reasonably well known from 1900, 1920. There's a 1948 report. There was really good work done in the 1960s. all of those concluded, well, they found gold and lots of it, but gold was between $20 and $60 an ounce. And so it was uninteresting. And the idea of an open pit resource didn't exist before 1960 anyway. And so through the 90s and up to the mid-2000s, the exploration was still, they did a poor job, to be honest. They didn't discover much, and that was part of the interpretation, there's nothing here. But again, the Klondike is covered with black muck. It's a northern story. There is no outcrop. The only way to explore it really effectively in the modern era would be drill it, and that's what we're doing. And that's been the difference. So we've drilled 80 to 90,000 meters in 5 years, whereas the previous explorers who spent almost 20 years, they drilled 6 or 7,000 meters in short holes all over the place and didn't conclude much.
With the drill data from that go around, what could you take away from that really helped you push forward with 90,000?
They systematically drilled in the wrong direction as one.
Okay.
And that also supported the conclusion there's nothing there. They actually drilled a prospect that's central to our best zone. It's a quartz vein. That was one of my first holes. So we drilled 7.8 grams over 6 or 7 meters as a discovery hole on a vein that's exposed in a trench that's 80 meters long, dipping this way. And what they'd done is drill here, missed it, drilled there, missed it, came back here and drilled there, missed it, and concluded there was nothing there. Mm-hmm. It's exposed. Anyway, so that tells you the level of what it was started with. And it was, so we, in the first 19 holes that we drilled in 2015, 14 of them had visible gold. We drilled 4 different zones. We made 2 legitimate discoveries from that. And both of those are now going to be in our mineral resource.
So actively drilling, walk us through kind of the results here. And are you getting what you expect to be seeing? Are you getting better than you expected? You know, how do you sum up success in 90,000 meters, I guess?
Well, it's been totally a learning experience because the data that we had was unreliable. So we 2 zones, the Lone Star Zone, which is the source of Bonanza Creek, it's been shed down in the creek, is fine-grained, millimeter-size gold. And so that looks entirely different than the Standard Zone, which is the source of Eldorado Creek. Eldorado Creek, the placer, is known for bird's eye chunks. The largest nugget in the Klondike, 60-some-odd ounces, came from there. These are coarse clots of gold, and that's what we see in the Standard Zone. I didn't, until probably the beginning of this year, I really was having a hard time distinguishing the two. I just thought they were the same. Mm-hmm. But we now can do that. And so the target at Lone Star is disseminated. It behaves nicely and evenly. And it's fine, it's still visible gold. Mm-hmm. And the Standard Zone is more challenging from a statistical point of view. It's all coarse, cloddy, nuggety gold. We had our best hole there was 1,000 grams gold, 1,000 grams silver over a meter within the Standard Zone. So that gives you an idea. There's some challenges there, but it's fantastic grade, and it's what you would expect in an orogenic gold deposit.
So looking forward to the rest of the year, with obviously very active with drilling, you know, what do you want to get accomplished here? If you like look forward into, you know, going into 2023, which is crazy to think about, but you know, what do you want to have accomplished here in the next 7-8 months?
I am looking ahead through 2023, but in mid-2023, I hope to have in excess of 1 million ounces as a mineral resource published. We will have commissioned a PEA by then, because this is coarse, free gold. It's recoverable easily by gravity, so there's no big difficulty here. It's effectively a big placer deposit. There's been 20 million ounces recovered by placer. It's simple and cheap. And so a PEA, I think, would look spectacular. and this gold is all at surface. Yeah. And then from there, carry on, because in the big picture, I think the Klondike can host a giant gold deposit. It is in that giant class already, but nobody's found any gold in the bedrock. And to compare the California gold rush to the Klondike gold rush, there's been nearly 40 million ounces of gold come out of California, and there's 220 plus million in the bedrock. That potential is still has been unrecognized until now in the Klondike, and I think we have a lot to go and find.
Really interesting story, reinterpreting the areas of probably the most pronounced gold rush in the entire world. So best of luck to you this summer. Look forward to catching up with you maybe next year, and we'll talk about those technical reports.
Perfect.
All right, that's Peter Tallman, President and CEO of Klondike Gold, again trading on the TSX Venture with the symbol KG. Back here at the Vancouver Resource Investment Conference. Happy to now sit across the table here with Scott Birdall. He's the president and CEO of Snowline Gold Corp. They trade on the Venture Exchange with the symbol SGD. It's been quite a great year for Snowline, actually, because if you were an investor a year ago, you'd probably be pretty happy with the share price.
Yeah, I think so, and hopefully if you're an investor a year from now, you'll be happy with the share price, too.
I mean, but, you know, it's been a tough year for the junior resource markets, but, you know, there's a few stories there that are bucking the trend, and Snowline's one.
Yeah, I mean, we set the company up around a big district-scale idea that there's this unrecognized gold district hiding out there in the Selwyn Basin, and we really kind of hit it out of the park with our with two discoveries on our first two targets last year, two drill discoveries on totally untested targets, and so I think for the right story, the right series of events, the market is still there. So yeah, we've been really fortunate to have that support. We have some strong shareholders, and things are going smoothly.
Let's talk about Rogue here, and give us kind of a walkthrough of how you acquired it. You mentioned district scale potential here.
Yeah.
That phrase is kind of thrown out a lot in this business, but what are you seeing that makes you kind of reaffirm that that's what you have?
Well, two things. One is just the scale. It is a big area. But the other is really, speaking about Rogue and the property to the north, Einarsson, and several properties right in that vicinity, we've recognized big gold anomalies and now these big gold discoveries. And there are multiple deposit types, too. And so you're starting to look at more of like, more than just like, okay, here's a gold occurrence and here's one over here, this is a district. We're seeing a very fertile metallogenic province where you have this type of gold deposit, you have this type of gold deposit, you have this type of gold deposit, and you're seeing that it's just, you know, these rocks themselves are, this environment is very fertile for whatever reason. So that's sort of the other thing that we mean when we call it a district, that this really is, a new mineral province that just hasn't been recognized before.
So if you're getting diversified geology here in the area, like, it's great to see, but I also would assume there's a little bit of challenges that faces when it comes to exploring, because, I mean, how do you approach different types of rock here if it's different all over the place?
Yeah, the different deposit types do take maybe a different hat on your head in terms of your geological thinking. And we've been lucky enough to bring in a team with a lot of diverse experience too. So we're able to kind of tackle different things with from different lenses and kind of make the most of each project. And also, you know, the way we approach the targets also in terms of how we prioritize them, that depends on a few factors, including the geology and sort of the grade and the potential that we see there, and even. Drilling and how easy it is to drill in terms of rock hardness and things like that. We have to pay attention to that. But overall, in several different deposit types, we have some pretty intriguing targets. So nothing has kind of fallen off the wagon yet in terms of our pipeline.
Scott, you're a young guy. You know, what is it about the Yukon that you were always attracted to, that really wanted to work in some of the toughest conditions, but yet some of the best conditions? I mean, it's a geologist playground up there,
yeah.
Anyways.
Well, I joke that it was Stockholm Syndrome because I was born and raised up there and dragged out into the bush by my father, who's a prospector, ever since I was a little kid. And, it's when you're little, it's a lot of bugs, a lot of rain and that sort of thing. But you very quickly start to appreciate appreciate it. And it's home, and I love it there. I'm happy to have, after decades of work with my father, to have gotten into some pretty exciting targets and have a good run with Snowline.
You can't be the only young guy who's looking to build companies in the Yukon. Talk about, is there going to be a next generation of young Yukoners creating companies and being CEOs in the exploration business?
I think so. Both in the Yukon and in Vancouver. A lot of Vancouverites have spent a lot of their career in the Yukon as well. And there are already people doing big things in various companies in the Yukon. I mean, Graham Downs is still fairly young, and he did a lot with Attack. And you have people in Attack who are doing great things there. And then there's more coming out of the pipes as well. You have core assets. They're in northern British Columbia still, but run by a fairly young guy as well.
So. Very good. So talk to me about this spring and summer. What's on the docks, on the docket here? What will you potentially be presenting to the market here as far as news?
Yeah, we're jumping right back into it. We're well-financed with about $8 million. And we're bringing a second drill in. Last year we made two discoveries with just the one rig. We're bringing in a second, and we left the first one out there. So it's parked and ready to start turning on about June 1st. We have people out there making preparations to start our camp construction in the very near future, doing a very aggressive program, a lot of surface work on a lot of targets, and then and moving those two drills around to kind of optimize the 4 or 5 month window that we have there to really explore. So we're hoping to bolster the discoveries that we made last year, really provide a lot more sense of scale on them, as well as making additional grassroots discoveries on additional targets.
On the equity side, you've obviously done real well. It's been a very volatile time for the market here. But like I mentioned, Snowline is obviously seems to be bucking that trend. Not too many companies can say that. I guess, through this volatile time, what's something you've learned as a young CEO of an exploration company that maybe caught you off guard or you had to adapt to quickly?
Wow, that's a good question. A lot of different things. I suppose, just seeing that volatility. I mean, it's nice when, we have volatility, but we have been kind of going up. But I've learned a lot about market expectations in terms of your results and so on. And there are a lot of investors out there, looking for a long-term growth story like we offer. But there are investors there, looking to really, they want news next week and that sort of a thing. And so, as a seasonal company working in one jurisdiction, that's something we have to be very cognizant of. But it's definitely been a learning experience.
Well, with $8 million in the bank, it looks like you can still move forward through this volatility. So that's a really good position to be in right now, obviously.
Yeah, exactly. We're very happy with where we are. And that was a lesson that some mentors and others in the company who are helping guide it kind of got us to where we are in terms of that idea. Let's make hay while the sun's shining. Let's raise in the fall now, and we're set to go for next season. We can always turn on the taps again if we like what we're seeing and if the market likes what it's seeing and that sort of thing. But it's very nice to have that out of the way and to be just focused on the season.
So what does success look like? If you look forward to the end of the year, what does success for Snowline look like? Is it new discoveries, obviously getting to some sort of resource? What does it look like?
Yeah, I think we're too early to be talking resource at this point still. But success is new discoveries. Success is expanding on our existing discoveries, getting a better sense of the scale and the controls on mineralization as well, so that that'll give us a better idea of how to build those out and also how to explore elsewhere in the district.
Okay. Scott, thanks so much for your time.
Yeah, thank you, Trevor.
Yeah. That is Scott Birdall, President and CEO of Snowline Gold, again trading on the Venture Exchange with the symbol SGD. Back here at the Vancouver Resource Investment Conference, Trevor Hall with the Yukon Mining Alliance. We continue to make our way throughout the Yukon right now. Happy to check in with White Gold Corp. and the CEO, Mr. David D'Onofrio. White Gold trades on the TSX Venture with the symbol WGO. David, welcome great. Back. It's good to see you in
yeah,
person again.
Great to be here. Great to see a lot of people in person again. This is fantastic to see such a good turnout at the show. I'm really pleased by that.
I got to give props to the Yukon Mining Alliance and all the members here, companies such as yours, because you're rolling pretty heavy. And you can't escape it because the front door's right there.
Yeah,
they
right.
have to
you
see
know,
it.
No, they do a good job. We're fortunate to have them kind of in our corner. They advocate, they get us set up at these conferences. They bring in a lot of eyeballs, not just in Canada, internationally. So yeah. They've done a great job, and actually one of the directors with them, and I'm really pleased with what they've done so far.
Let's kind of like jump into business here and talk about White Gold and really obviously ongoing development. So there's a lot of work that has been done, a lot of work continuing to be done. You know, kind of let's take a step into this year and really what the plan is.
Yeah, White Gold, it's actually a really unique and special exploration company in my view. Obviously, I'm the CEO of the company, also a principal at Power One Capital. We're a merchant bank based in Toronto. We've been investing in resource exploration companies for over 20 years now, right? And we've seen the good, the bad, the ugly. And over the years, you learn, what makes a successful exploration company a success, right? You can only control so much, but in this business of high risk, you're well suited to do as much as you can to address those risks where possible. And White Gold, what made it so appealing to us to partner with Sean Ryan, is that it checked the boxes of having so many prospective opportunities to mitigate the natural risk that will come with these types of opportunities, that we were sort of fully, over the moon to be able to partner with such an opportunity. And that's how I ended up in the CEO position, right? Very often we'll partner with these guys, but it was just such a unique opportunity, and I'll get into why that, we really sort of put our brand behind this and put our shoulder behind this for the last 5 years, and it's now really culminating to what we thought it would be. And I think the most exciting times are just lying right ahead for us, right? And we're gonna see that in this year's program. And just to summarize, why is it so special? Number one, it's in an amazing jurisdiction, right? It's in Canada, it's in the Yukon. I think the Fraser Institute just put out their global rankings. Yukon is top 10 globally, right? That's always been important. I think in this day and age, we're seeing more and more why that's important, number one. Number two, it's just so underexplored, right? Nothing's happened, but a lot of places are underexplored, but when you have a tier one jurisdiction, it's underexplored, it's a special opportunity. And when you combine that with the prolific history of that district, it just really sort of, it's hard not to get excited about what could be happening. We have 20 million ounces of gold on surface plaster over the last 100 years, right? You have Western Copper with 20 million ounces. Hardly zero modern day exploration happened at all up until the last 10 years ago when Sean Ryan, why did nobody go there? And the answer is you couldn't prospect because there's no outcrop. So Sean Ryan, the brilliant and analytical mind he is, he's like, I'm going to crack this code, figure out how to prospect, and he did that. Mm-hmm. And within a couple years of him first identifying some mineralized systems, the very first diamond drilling that started happening led to immediate hard rock, major multi-million ounce discoveries taken out by major mining companies within a couple years. That's the junior resource company. That is within a couple years of work and on a couple of properties. Enter White Gold. We now own everything that Sean's gone up there and staked that's not in the hands of a major, Newmont, or Western Copper, and the other piece that was in Kinross. Kinross now joined us and rolled their properties into us to let us take over, knowing that Sean and his team would be best suited to advance those.
So you're managing that exploration?
We're managing that exploration, and so Kinross is one of our partners, Agnico is one of our partners, and I think that should validate to outsiders what the true nature of this opportunity is, right? Which is an entire district in a tier one jurisdiction with a prolific history and with so much success with so little work done. So it really, really is a special opportunity. And in what we've seen in the last 5 years with the work that we've done, we've actually exceeded our own expectations. And what does that mean in real term? So we've defined significant resources. We're about 1.8 million ounces across all categories in our flagship deposits. And even more exciting, and why we all got into this project in the first place, was to make new discoveries. We've made a number of very significant high-grade discoveries in the last couple of years. And this year is going to see us following up those discoveries with diamond drilling. And that's, you know, the best possible situation you can be in as a junior.
Dave, let me ask you about kind of the long-term strategy here, because, I mean, I've been following White Gold for 5 years as well. You know, tremendous exploration success that's been ongoing, right? You know, but how does the company transition from an explorer to putting it all together and maybe stepping into that development type of strategy?
That's a great question. Our team, our strength is we're explorationists. We don't want to necessarily develop this project. So the goal when White Gold was put together was to be a project generator, go out there, make the grassroots discoveries, demonstrate the upside of these opportunities, and then look to monetize those opportunities to other players in the district. Who's that going to be, right? At the time there was Goldcorp, they were racing to put the coffee deposit in production. That obviously got acquired by Newmont. Newmont is still advancing that on a little bit of a different timeline, bigger company, they have different parameters. I think they're very close to what they want. But in an ideal world, where would I want to see White Gold, you know, doing over the next 10 and 20 years is continue to make discoveries and look to monetize them in different capacities. Obviously, Agnico and Kinross are our partners. They're logical suitors. There's a tremendous amount of interest from a lot of different companies, mid-tiers, financial groups, to take these assets and move them to the next level. So, you know, today we don't have that answer, but I'm hoping, you know, we're at that point in time now where we have assets that are ready to go to the next level, right? 1.8 million ounces, open pit, 2+ grams in Canada. There's a very, very short list of assets of that size and tenure. And those, especially in this environment where there's been so little exploration, are few and far between. And, you know, I think those are going to be, there's going to be a lot of pressure to move those forward, which, you know, we're going to be happy to participate.
You raised $9 million back in December. How does that set you up, you know, through this year and into 2020?
Yeah, so that fully funds us for this year's program and carries us into the following year. And that's been basically our strategy. And that sort of came together on the backs of a big grassroots discovery we made on our Betty project. We announced 50 meters of 3.5 grams. Basically, Nico called us and said, you know what, we want to top up to 19.9%. Let's see what we can put together. And that launched that financing. And through those discussions, okay, we want to make sure we have enough for next year and some into the following year. And that's what we're just on the cusp of announcing those details in the next week or so. So I think that's going to, you know, if you want to touch on more on those details, that's what we're most excited about today.
And did some of the big partners, Kinross and Agnico, did they come in on that financing?
Absolutely, yeah, for sure.
That's really important right now. Like, you know, the market's experiencing quite a bit of volatility, and I've always kind of thought companies that have those partnerships with major producers are going to be in a much better position than some people.
It's incredibly helpful, there's no doubt about it, yeah. From a financial perspective, also from a technical perspective. These partners have added a tremendous amount of value, and that's why we chose to get into bed with them in the first place, right? You know, these guys know how to operate, they're experts, especially in Canada, or northern, you know, Alaska, Northwest Territories, et cetera. So they've got the skill set, they've got the resources, and they've, you know, been a tremendous help for us, for sure.
Are you drilling year-round or no?
Not year-round. So, you know, I think, you know, frankly, that's a challenge for junior companies in a seasonal type environment. It gets quiet over the winter. Our season's usually the end of May to sort of sometime in October. It's often reflected in our share prices, which is kind of what you see right now. It's sort of dipping in. But things should be getting real exciting again once the drills start turning in a couple of weeks.
With drills turning, obviously, we'll be awaiting assay results. That's been a huge pain in the butt lately, or the last couple of years. But does that seem to be alleviating at all?
We think it should be better this year for sure, right? Time will tell, but, you know, based on these are conversations we've had through the year, we don't want to be surprised, especially when you're seasonal. You know, you can't be waiting a long time for your assays. So we're hopeful that this year will be much closer to what historic norms have been.
Last word I'll give to you, you know, what do you want investors and resource speculators to be watching for White Gold this summer?
So we have what I think is going to be a very exciting diamond drill program. We had our Betty Discovery last year, which I mentioned, 50 meters, 3.5 grams. That was a maiden program. That asset sits right contiguous to Newmont's coffee deposit, multi-million ounce discovery, right on the same fault system. You know, it's a contiguous to Casino's, you know, Western Copper's Monster project. So you're in elephant country. We tapped into a major system there. Holes of that tenure are, you know, there's a high probability we're going to find a lot more. So we're going to be doing a lot of diamond drilling on that target. 5 kilometers to the east of that, there's another target of very similar tenure based on the soil sampling that we've done in the past and some historic drilling. We're going to be executing a maiden diamond drill program there as well. So this is like why you invest in junior mining companies. So you've spent the work, you've checked all the boxes, and now you got the truth machine that's going in the ground. And when you're right, you know, you're rewarded big time. So that's half our program. The other half our program, I think, is going to be equally as exciting. We made a new discovery a couple years ago, 2 kilometers to the west of our flagship deposit called our Orion Surprise. We've been drilling that. We've defined a huge mineralized footprint of 400 meters by 400 meters by 400 meters. We're going to do some more work around that. Just to the south of that last year, we had a new discovery, 20 meters of 7 grams per ton on our Yulee's target. We think these might connect, so we're going to drill more on that Yulee's target. We're going to drill more in between. You know, so the opportunity for that deposit to get much bigger, you know, is always the case. But you know, we think the prospectivity is just getting better and better and better the more work we've done. And those targets there sit on a 6.5 kilometer trend that's seen almost no work. And based on the soil anomalies that we've seen where we made the discovery, we think there's going to be a couple more of those at least on this big trend. So we're doing a lot of work there too. So some, you know, very exciting discovery follow-up happening.
Important news items coming out later this summer.
Drills start turning in a couple weeks. So fall. This is, if you're not involved, you want to get involved.
David, thanks so much. Good to see you again.
Yeah, likewise.
All right. That's your White Gold update here from the Vancouver Resource Investment Conference. Again, White Gold trading on the TSX Venture, WGO. Happy to be sitting with Matt Turner, who's the CEO of Rockhaven Resources. They trade on the Venture Exchange with the symbol RK. Matt, I promised myself we wouldn't talk football.
Yeah, we'll try not to.
We'll try not to talk football. But actually, you know, in one of the on my bookcase, I have this wonderful rock that I got from the Klaza Project a couple years ago when we stepped foot there during the Yukon mine tours. Wonderful project up there, absolutely beautiful land. You did a lot of great work last season and with the exploration and the drill program. Finally started to see some of those results out.
Took a while.
So, you know, how do you describe the exploration work and the assay results that came out?
Yeah, well, it was an interesting year last year because we started off with the kind of the idea of, okay, let's see how we can, you know, best expand this deposit. So we started off by doing some step out drilling away from the resources, made some new discoveries. Furthermore, we stepped out to the south quite a ways, about 3 kilometers, into what was a new discovery made in 2020. And we did about, I think it was about 2,500 meters in that new zone that's called the Rusk. Got continuous hits along the 300 meter strike length that we've tested. So that's looking like it could be a significant new vein field in the overall vein camp that we're sitting in at Klaza. And then finally what we did at the end was we decided to put, say, the last 6,000 meters or so into advancing the main company goal is to take this project into pre-feasibility. So we really went strong on the infill drilling. So we did, again, about 6,000 meters on the infill side of things. Really targeting, I'd say, in weaker parts of the resources where there was either weaker resources or where there were actually just straight up waste blocks within the recently completed PEA that was done in 2020. To really see, okay, can we add more in the way of both increasing the ounces, but also potentially adding more economic ounces into areas where there is considered to be, as of right now, with the current economics, doesn't really exist, right? Where it's not economic. So, again, it took many months to get those results back, which we started seeing them at, I guess, around January, and we've got them out over the course of the next 2 months. But got some really nice infill results, again, coupled with the exploration results. But the infill results came back. We got some really stellar results in areas, like I say, we're effectively in waste blocks in the PEA. So I think that's going to be a real big step forward when we first do the updated resource estimate that will feed into the PFS study. That's right now we're eyeing up completion of that in about a year from now. So
it's the resource estimate?
The resource estimate and the PFS.
Are you going to do them together?
Together, basically, okay. Yeah. So I think that'll be a really, I think, key next step for the project, because when you start looking at the valuations that the market's given, right now we're, again, like most companies say, incredibly undervalued. For our price to NAV ratio right now, if you look at our 2020 PEA, look at our current $21 million market cap, we're at about a 0.04. And our peer group is at about a 0.18 when you're looking at North American projects with PEAs. Mm-hmm. Now, when you look at North American projects with PFS, that goes up to, they've got about a 38% or so average. So, again, we're looking for a re-rate on this company that could be incredibly significant. Again, we'll see how the market looks at our next stage of infill results and the resource, and then the PFS that comes off it. But we could be coming up for, I think, a real inflection point for this company, for the valuation, because right now we're not given basically anything, right?
Right.
It's pretty sad.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of companies out there trading the same where you are, anywhere from 10 to $20 million dollar market cap, unfortunately. But we are starting to see a little bit of buying coming in this week, so fingers crossed that it continues. But I want to ask you, obviously, taking time to get those drill results out, I don't know if a lot of people understand how challenging that is for somebody in your shoes, because you need those results to really start planning your next phase of drilling.
Yeah.
Now, if you're getting a lot of those results, last one's coming in just a couple months ago, I think it's safe to assume that you've been all hands on deck looking at those results and then putting together something that what you want to do this season as well. So how busy has it been collecting that data and planning?
I would say, especially on the step out targets, on how we're going to approach those. Sorry, when I say step out, I mean the distal targets, the ones that aren't at the resource. Those are the ones that I think take a lot of brain power on where to go next. The area, funny enough, that actually doesn't take that much brain power is the infill drilling, because you're basically going from what's now a 50-meter grid pattern just in drilling down to 25s.
Right.
So it's pretty set in stone where the next holes are going to be. The only bit of brain power I'd say that I think we really need to put in is to prioritize where are the most economic ounces. And again, we've got priorities A through, I guess, E. So, and again, it comes back to how much financing we can bring in on this next stage. So that's why we prioritize, and we'll attack the program as in that order, right? So.
Yeah, and I'm glad you mentioned financing. Ideally, how much do you want to raise here to get through?
It'll be about, if you look at the first step is going to be to complete the infill drilling. Right now, and this is based on our 2018 resource, 60% of the ounces is in the indicated category. So we're sitting at about a 1.6 million ounce gold equivalent global resource. I know we can't say that, but about 975,000 ounces gold equivalent is in the indicated category at a pretty high grade. It's about I think 6.3 grams gold equivalent average. The inferred is another 750,000 ounces or so gold equivalent, but at a lower grade. I think it was about 4.3 or so gold equivalent average. So the big focus, so again, we're at 60% in the indicated category. We still have that 40% to infill. We've already done 6,000 meters of that total infill drilling that's needed to be done. We did that last year. So we're looking at somewhere realistically around $3 to $4 million worth of drilling to convert effectively that priority A through E. Again, I'm not sure if we're going to go all the way down to the lower priority, because that's, you're looking at in the mine life, you're looking at year 10 and out basically, right? Yeah. So with a, right now we're at a 5% discount rate. Who knows, with inflation and everything, we might be going up to 8%, right? So so that's, again, we're going to be tackling those upper priority ones first, obviously, and converting on that, and then going from there with the PFS.
All right. So we'll expect to see news out of financing here shortly.
Exactly.
Fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed.
Then all hands on deck, and drilling continues for the
season.
Yeah,
we will have two. The plan is to have two drills going for the entire season. So.
Great.
Be good.
Best of luck to you and the team.
Thanks,
my friend.
Trevor.
Yeah, yeah. Stay safe out there, okay? Thanks. All right, that's Matt Turner, CEO of Rock Haven Resources. Again, trading on the TSX Venture with the symbol RK. We're continuing on our trip through the Yukon. Happy to be welcomed in by Gordon Neal today. He is the president and CEO of White Horse Gold Corp. They trade on the Venture Exchange with the symbol WHG. Gordon, pleasure to meet you today.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Oh, this is a relatively new company. It's got foundations of a company that people will be familiar with. But give us kind of the background of White Horse Gold and, you know, how it kind of came about.
Yeah, the Skookum Project, which was originally called the Tagish Lake Project, was inside of New Pacific Metals from 2011 to 2020, when it was spun out of New Pacific Metals to make White Horse Gold. New Pacific is in Bolivia and has Bolivian assets, and it wasn't really getting any value for shareholders inside New Pacific. So the CEO of New Pacific and the board decided to spin it out to get value for shareholders, because it was not the focus. I mean, it's got about 600,000 ounces of gold in it, gold equivalent, I should say, at a grade of about 8 or 9 grams. So it's a high-grade, past-producing gold story that needed to get some exposure so that we could get some value for shareholders for it.
And what was the, in 2021, what was the strategy with the company, and how does that transition for 2022?
So in 2021, there was a 17,000 meter drill program that was undertaken, very successful program. There's a lot of infrastructure at the Skookum project. There's a 300 ton a day mill, which is not in operation right now, but it was a past producer. It produced 80,000 ounces of high grade gold around 10 grams per ton in the late 80s. So it's got infrastructure, it's close to White Horse, 40 minutes away by car, and it is really, really one of those assets that, with the kind of grade that we're seeing and the fact that it was a past producer and was a profitable past producer, we think that we can create a lot of value for our shareholders. That's 17,000 meters. We have gotten all the assays back, we're putting all the numbers out. However, we're now going to update our mineral resource estimate, and hopefully move that from the 600,000 ounce equivalent range as high as it can go. I can't say the number right now because it's internal.
Yeah. Talk to me about the infrastructure. I mean, obviously being a past producer, is there anything that is salvageable to use in a project yet, or is it? Or no, you basically start.
Yeah, the equipment that there was used in the 80s, it's quite old. I would say you'd have to rehab the whole thing. The good thing about having that infrastructure, though, is you've actually got a footprint to build. If you want to build a 500, if we want to build a 500 ton a day mill, 700 ton a day mill, we've got a footprint already there to be able to do that. You wouldn't be able to salvage much out of it, but you've got the roads and everything that lead to the mill that are still obviously intact, and that's very useful.
What about some data, exploration data, that is useful for the exploration now going forward? Is anything that was...
Well, the 17,000 meters was very helpful to have us to look, have us look into what's going on, sure. what we're going to do in this season. We're a little late in actually getting our program started in this season, mm-hmm. Just because we're still looking at those numbers. Some of the geology is quite complex. You have three deposits, the Goodell deposit, the Mount Skookum deposit, and the Skookum Creek deposit. And you know, eventually we're going to wind up, hopefully, doing a hub and spoke kind of a production scenario where you'd have one mill fed by three, by the three deposits. But it's a little early days to say that. But we're still working on what the program is going to look like for this summer.
And let me take a step back. As you mentioned, potentially putting out a new resource. Would that just be on one of the deposits or all of them?
No, it's all the deposits combined.
Okay.
So it's Skookum Creek, Mount Skookum, and Goodell.
Okay.
I will say that the resource update will have a singular focus on Skookum Creek because that's where the bulk of the 17,000 meters was drilled last year. Okay. So that will make up a large part of the resource update.
Okay, very good. And you have gotten some drill results back here. I mean, it's really nice grades. Mm-hmm. Mount Skookum, the headline, I think, was 15.5 grams per ton gold over seven meters.
Yeah.
But you mentioned it's the variable geology. And, you know, what are the expectations, like, based on that hit? You know, how do you kind of follow up nice grades like that?
Well, you can play this game one of two ways. You can infill and drill close to that and pull out the same numbers and try to tell the investing public that you've got more when you really don't have more. Or you can step out a little bit and if you're good geologically, and we have a good technical team, we're lucky. We're 30% owned by Silvercorp Metals, and Silvercorp is a producer and a very profitable company run by Ree Fink. And I have access to all of his assets. I mean, I have access to mineral geologists. I have access to geophysicists. He has a huge team in China that I have access to. And it really helps us and the shareholders for me to have access to those assets. So to answer your question, I kind of went around a little circle there. However, yes, we would infill to de-risk and to make sure that the numbers that we're showing you in the drill area are consistent, but you also want to step out to find the edges of the envelope of mineralization. So we're doing both.
What was the depth of some of the higher grade stuff there?
Yeah, it's around 400 or 500 meters.
Okay. So I'll give you the last word. You know, as we kind of move forward here through the conference and we look forward to the exploration work up at the project. You know, what do you want investors to know this week and as you move forward?
Well, I'd like them to know. I mean, investors should know that companies like White Horse Gold, where you have a past producer that is a high grade past producer that was in that era. It was the late 80s. But for Total Energy Gold, who actually drilled that, who actually processed that ore, they actually at 450 gold, they were making money with the ore that was up at Mount Skookum. And so to know that you've got the potential of good economics, and you've already have an example of good economics through past production, and all we're doing is trying to make it bigger, means that you probably have a company that you should be looking at for future investing in terms of its growth and its grade profile.
All right. Gordon, pleasure to have you on here, and thanks so much for the introduction, because I needed it just as much. I seen the name, didn't know much about the story, so I really appreciate the walkthrough.
Thanks, Trevor.
All right.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. That's your update from White Horse Gold Corp and CEO Gordon Neal, again trading on the TSX Venture with the symbol WHG. We're winding down the afternoon here with the Yukon Mining Alliance at the Vancouver Resource Investment Conference. Happy to welcome in Scott Sheldon here. He's the president of Flow Metals Corp. They trade on the CSE with the symbol FWM. Scott, good to see you once again.
Yeah, for sure. Good to see you.
Yeah. Let's get kind of an introduction to Flow. Right now, you know, talk about the projects and really what you're undertaking.
All right. Sounds good. The last time we saw each other was up in Dawson City.
Yeah.
It was a couple years ago. And in fact, that's where our property is. It's about an hour and a half drive west from Dawson City. I actually have to cross the ferry, but it's in the 60-mile Placer District. And that's kind of a continuation of the Klondike. It's just about an hour and a half away. But our property is pretty neat. It's in the district that was actually discovered right before the Klondike gold rush took off. So it's been around for a while. So there's obviously been a lot of work done. The district itself has seen about just over 500,000 ounces pulled out of the Placer. So we're there looking for the source of all that placer. And they have these nice big chunky gold nuggets too that they're pulling out of the ground. It's a neat project. We have four placer creeks and three active placer mines on our property.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got lots of smoke. We're just looking for the source of all that.
Yeah, walk me through. These are always interesting stories to me with the historic placer mining operations, but looking for the source. Walk me through like exactly how you're approaching this. What are you looking for from the placer to the bedrock?
Yeah, no, that's a good question. And they've been trying to do it for a while.
So right.
There's been three main programs since we've taken over the project. The most recent was back in 2010 and 2011. It was run by the gold group, like Radius and Rockola Gold. And so they were basically targeting right near Miller Creek, which is one of the more famous creeks in the area. And they basically looked at the top pay streaks and kind of went up the hill from there just to see where the valley had eroded away. And they started following a thrust fault system that basically runs all the way across the property. So that was kind of their indication that might have been an orogenic source for all the gold. But you go up there and there's a lot of kind of lore with the placer miners. They keep their cards pretty close to the chest, but the guys that run the placer mines on our project, they're investors in our project as well. So they've been pretty good sharing their knowledge. So part of it is kind of tapping their knowledge and their experience with all the work that they've done there as well.
And what's been some of your the early exploration work results? What have you been seeing?
So we basically tried to put together all the info from the last two projects in 2010, 2011.
Mm-hmm.
The project itself was basically left kind of on the wayside as that was right at the downturn. So it was basically repackaged by Roger Holstein and two of the placer miners, and they put together this thrust fault zone package. So we've kind of gone through a bunch of the old data, trying to digitize some of it. And we ended up running a RAB program last year, basically trying to confirm some of the workings that we come through with all this historical data.
Right.
So we had some decent hits with the RAB. RAB's obviously pretty shallow, so it doesn't give you the best depth coverage, but we like what we saw, so we want to go back with an RC and do some trenching as well. Mm. Having placer mining on the property, there's a lot of heavy machinery there, so it makes trenching is really easy, really cost effective, road accessible project. So yeah, there's a lot of work we can do.
So when will you be back on the project, and really what's the program look like for this season?
So we have a zone of, it's about 3 kilometers along strike.
Mm-hmm.
We've got some pretty good soils, soil samples on surface, and we've confirmed it with some of the drilling. So it looks like we have 5 horizons that kind of continue along here. And they basically span in between Miller Creek. So the idea is to go test kind of maybe with some trenching across so we can get a better idea of the width. And then obviously to go in there with an RC. What we've done is we've figured out the best orientation to attack this with as well, so that we're hitting multiple veins on the way down, so that we get a better idea of grade.
So will you be drilling this year?
We'd like to. We're not funded to drill yet. We're fully permitted to drill, but we're gonna need some funding before we drill.
So. You go to the market here pretty soon?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. When do you think that might come into play here?
in terms of financing?
Yeah.
Well, we're in the right spot right here, so there's lots of interest.
Maybe
so.
This week?
Yeah, that's right. But we're optimistic, and we like the project, so we'll see what we can do.
Last time I met you, you were kind of in the base metals battery space. This is more precious metals here. You know, talk about that transition from one to the other here, and really what made you make a jump into gold.
So this was actually the property from the battery metals company. And when that company went battery metals, this one was spun out into its own company. So Flow Metals itself has only been around for about a year and a half, listed on the CSE under FWM. And so this was kind of a way to focus entirely on gold. We liked the project at 60 Mile. It also has a project in BC, in Brenda. Totally different. Totally different projects. We love the Yukon though. It's a great spot to work. Great mining incentives. We've got a YMIP grant for this year. So that gives us another $40,000 to put towards exploration. There's being close to Dawson City as well. It's even just for visiting, it's a great town, but there's a lot of resources there as well for mining.
Talk about the collective community of this type of project. And I was thinking, you know, we talked to Peter Tallman earlier this morning. Similar type of, you know, taking old placer operations, looking for the feeder zone type of exploration here. You know, but I'm just kind of curious, you know, people who work and operate in the Yukon all know each other. It's really pretty tight-knit type of community. How do you two, or some people with similar exploration work, kind of help each other out in like really trying to understand what's going to kind of crack the code? Mm-hmm.
No, Peter is one of the guys who's been very helpful. Even a lot of the talks he does, but even if you just approach him as a person, he's more than happy to share the information that they've seen. Since Sean Ryan, the whole industry up in the Yukon is generally a pretty friendly group. So we've been really happy working there for the past 10 years now.
So what do you need moving forward? I mean, other than money to go drill, you know, like what is something you want to see here in this session that really can show you and investors that you can, you know, what does success kind of, how is that defined for you?
Yeah, no, good question. So if you look at the battery metal space, that's been really easy to raise money. For gold, it's been a bit of a slug for the last year and a half. We listed at the kind of peak of the last market. We were lucky enough to raise close to $1 million at that point, and we've been very frugal with our money. We've made it last through two programs in the Yukon and two programs in BC. And we're very low overhead company, so we're comfortable living in this kind of environment, but ideally we want to raise. So seeing a pretty good crowd here, and seeing hopefully interest coming back into gold with, I'm sure you hear this a lot with inflation and all that, then it's got to be going somewhere. So once that starts to kick in, then the gold market can be a fun place to be.
Turns out inflation wasn't so transitory.
Yeah, that's right.
So hopefully we see some more buying coming into gold and the junior mining sector. Scott, thank you so much for the update. Best of luck this season, and we look forward to seeing the news coming out of Flow Metals.
Cheers, thanks.
That's Scott Sheldon, president of Flow Metals, again trading on the CSE with the symbol FWM.